to the Columbia University Sports Podcast, The Cusp Show. I'm the solo host for this episode, Joe Favorito, as Tom Richardson, my co-host, is off doing other things. And we've got a great guest. And in the 10 years that I've been involved with the sports management program, people say, how do people get involved? How do students come along? And this is kind of a unique story. My guest today, Andrew Hawkins, and I met literally in a bar last year at MIT. And he was there speaking at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. We got to talk a little bit at a New York Sports Venture Capital meetup that night. And he mentioned he wanted to go to grad school. And I told him a little bit about Columbia. And Andrew Hawkins, wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns, got into our program, did an online class last semester, and is now here taking classes, flying up from Florida at least one day a week, and experiencing kind of life on the Upper West Side for the first time. So, Andrew, welcome.
Appreciate you having me, Joe.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. Wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns, kind of a circuitous route to get to that point. 2 years ago, led the team in catches. Had a couple of injuries last year. Still a valuable member of the team. Obviously, the Browns have gone through some issues with what's-his-name, the quarterback, or the potential quarterback. And the most important thing is kind of how you got there. And coming out of a MAC school, had kind of a storied career there. Brother played in the NFL. And how you kind of came about not only getting into the NFL, and there's a reality show involved, there's time at the CFL with the Montreal Alouettes involved, stops with other teams, and then kind of found your way in. So let's kind of talk about your background a little bit first, and then we'll get to kind of the bigger picture things on why you're in the Columbia program, what you want to achieve, and how, more importantly, you've built your own brand.
So yeah, like you said, I mean, I went to school at Toledo. I'm not the biggest guy. I'm 5'7", 175 pounds. You know, played receiver there, played cornerback there. You know, always have been the kind of player that wanted to do whatever was necessary to help the team. When I got done, I didn't have a lot of interest, obviously, with my size and being from a small school and not exactly record-breaking stats. I went on to finish my degree at Toledo. I spent a year off. I was coaching wide receivers at Toledo. I was doing internships. I interned with the Detroit Lions in their personnel department. I was working as a caddy part-time to help pay rent. I was working in a factory. So I kind of was beginning my transition for life after sport at the time. And then we were watching Pardon the Interruption on ESPN, and they talked about a reality show that Michael Irvin was doing that was going to take guys off the street and give them the opportunity to compete for a spot in training camp. So I thought it was far-fetched, but long story short, I did everything I had to do to try to get on the show. It worked out in my favor. I went on the show. I was the runner-up of the show. I felt like I should have won, but I'm sure.
Who won?
Jesse Holly. And he's been a couple years in the NFL, but I'm sure every contestant felt like they should have won. Mm-hmm. So after that, I got a CFL opportunity, played two seasons for the Montreal Alouettes, won two Grey Cup championships, and signed with the NFL with the St. Louis Rams. Right after was the NFL lockout. So once the lockout was over, I went to camp and got cut on the first day because they drafted three receivers during the lockout, and I was a low guy on the totem pole. Got picked up by Cincinnati, started off in their practice squad, got an opportunity to play, and the rest is history.
And then when you got to the Browns, did you have a feel? Did you have a choice where you were going to go? Did the Browns call you? How does that work? Because most people who are listening to this won't know kind of the process of, you know,
yeah,
how those things kind of play out.
You know, it's weird because right after I finished college at Toledo, I did have the opportunity to try out for the Browns in a rookie minicamp, which is where they bring 70 rookies in. It's their draft picks. It's their undrafted guys, which equal probably about 15 to 20 guys. And then there's another 50 tryout guys just to fill the camp up. And I did great at the camp. By all accounts, I did awesome, was one of the best performers. They told me they were going to sign me. So, you know, I waited by the phone for, you know, the days, the weeks, the months, and nothing ever materialized. So when free agency hit 2 years ago and I had the opportunity to field some calls from some teams, the Browns were one of the first teams to call me, and they were very aggressive, and they showed exactly what they envisioned me doing for the team and the opportunity they were going to give me, and I just felt like it was the right fit. You know, I felt like it was a full circle situation, and, you know, that's how I ended up in Cleveland.
And it's worked out very well for you so far.
Yeah.
you know, the ownership group, there have obviously been a lot of changes, almost constant changes with upper management, but you seem to have come through it and thrived in that situation. Like I said, even before with, you know, some of the distractions that come up when Johnny Manziel walks in the door.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, they provided me an opportunity to expand my role. And I think as a professional, as you continue to climb the ranks and someone who's come from my background, you know, that's what the goal is, to continue to show your worth and to be able to press the envelope of what people think that you're capable of doing. And the Browns have certainly provided that. And honestly, I think, you know, from some of the moves we made this offseason as far as coaching changes and, you know, people in the personnel department, I think we're on the right track.
Great. Along the same path while you're pursuing a pro career, you touched on some of the other things that you've looked at or you've done. Your brother, as I said, played in the NFL, was a talk show host in Cincinnati for a while.
Yes.
When did you start thinking about life after football? Was it immediate because you didn't know if there was going to be a football after you graduated from Toledo?
Yeah.
Or was it something that kind of came along?
You know, it's unique because, you know, and this is all something I'm starting to figure out as time goes on. I know a lot of former football players, NFL, college, you name it, and they all talk about that transition period when they're done, that kind of they're in, you know, that state of they're not really sure where to take their life or what the next step is, because you devoted so much time and so much effort into the game of football, like 20 years, like your whole schedule has been devoted around this sport, and so it takes time to kind of figure things out after that. And I've always wondered, I'm like, why do I feel like I know what that's like? Why do I understand that? And it honestly, the answer is I've gone through it.
Right.
You know, so I've, well, some will call it a luxury. You know, some wouldn't. But I went through a year and a half doing that, like where I thought football was over for me and I was trying to figure things out. Well, you know, now I'm back in the game and I understand what that time is coming again. So between that and having the opportunity to see my brother go through the transition and see family members who have also gone through it, I think it gives me a little bit of experience through their eyes to see what I need to prepare for and try to, you know, dodge some of those obstacles.
How was there a point when you were either with the Alouettes or when you first got out of school or you got let go and the Browns didn't call that you said, you know what, I'm not going to do this and let me immediately start thinking about things and kind of what was the thought process at that point?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of times where I thought football was done for sure. Like, I like to say I'm so confident and, you know, being able to see the future, but that's not it, man. It was, honestly, things would happen, and by the grace of God, I would be put back in a situation where football was a thing again. I can remember when I was at the internship with the Lions, they told me it was a one-month internship through training camp. And they basically said, hey, we have another internship. It's a six-month-long internship, and it usually turns into a full-time job.
Was it a paying internship?
Yeah.
It was, okay.
It was. And it usually turns into a full-time job in the personnel department. And that is an incredible opportunity, especially for someone who's enthusiastic about sports like I am, fresh out of college. But being in the training camp and scouting during my internship while I was there, I felt like I was as good or better than a lot of the guys they had there. So if anything, it made me do the opposite. Like, you know what? I can play football. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know where the opportunities were going to come from, you know, but things like that happened. And so I just would just trust myself, trust that if I did the work, God would do the rest. And, you know, here I am.
So here you are, and we'll talk a little bit about the Columbia program and what you hope to get out of it. Mm-hmm. But along the way, it's safe to say you've never been a shrinking violet. You've always kind of had your opinions. You're a great listener. You've been a mentor to a lot of people. You've seen it from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's obviously emerged in the last couple of years is your ability to build your own personal brand outside of football or leverage football to get there, and also create your own voice.
Yeah.
And a lot of the classes, not just at Columbia, but in other places, talk about controlling the narrative and creating your own narrative and how that's important in sales, in marketing, in communications, in law, and knowing kind of what the message is. How did it come about for you? And we'll talk about the Players Tribune and some of the other things that you've done. But was it an innate thing, or was it something where you looked at other people and said, these guys aren't controlling their own message? From now, whether I'm in the NFL, the CFL, you know, working on Wall Street, teaching, I need to figure out kind of what my message is and how do I sell myself? And was that the selling of yourself important when you tried to get back into the NFL?
Yes and no. So I guess how I came about it was when I got to the NFL, one thing that struck me as odd, I guess, for lack of a better term, is, you know, everyone looks at NFL players like they are these big, bigger-than-life superstars. And, you know, they're incredible athletes, and kids look up to them, and that's all well and great. But what I noticed when I got in the locker room, it was just the guys. You know, nobody actually felt that way. But then once they would leave the locker room, I would see them put on this, persona. You know, this persona, right. Like, yeah, I'm bigger than life, and that wasn't them. You know, so it struck me as odd that I'm like, you're living up to what people think of you, as opposed to just being yourself, which is more relatable. People understand it more. You can tell your story that way. And so once I seen that, like from a marketing standpoint, that was my goal. I wanted people to actually see who I was. So with the Players Tribune article, I was very transparent about my insecurities, about my obstacles, about the challenges, you know.
So for everyone who's listening, you touched on the Players Tribune article. How did it come about? You wrote a two-part piece in the Players Tribune, which basically you kind of opened the kimono and said, I'm Andrew Hawkins. Here's who I am as a person, not just the NFL star. Sort of what you just related. But how did it come about? And then more importantly, what was the response that you got from brands, from fans, from everybody kind of across the landscape?
They approached me last year at the Super Bowl when I was doing Radio Row, you know, about this new website that Derek Jeter was starting. It's from, you know, firsthand accounts of players, of stories, experiences, what have you. As I was a little skeptical at first, you know, so as time went on, we continued to communicate. They actually put me in contact with Derek himself. And, you know, it's something he's worked on and he's very hands-on with. And that was a big deal for me. So I wrote the story, and what the story basically, like you alluded to, it was me telling exactly how I went from, you know, undrafted, living on a friend's couch, to signing a first day big contract in free agency in the NFL. And it touched on everything from me sneaking weights in my pocket on pro day to putting clay on the bottom of my heels to make my height taller, to me camping outside of a stairwell where Jerry Jones was. And it basically showed everything, every detail in the story that hasn't been told. And the response was incredible. It really was. I think people could identify with that feeling of, you know, not being able to control your own destiny. You know, this is a situation where I wanted something so bad and I felt like I was equipped to do this job, but me attaining that goal had nothing to do with myself. It was someone else had to give me that opportunity, no matter how hard I worked, no matter how hard I tried. And this was me trying to put myself in destiny's way to make that happen. And the response, like I said, was incredible. I got approached by, you know, for books, movies, documentaries, brands. I got endorsement deals from it. I've been public speaking. I've got job offers from companies that when you're done playing, you can come work for us. You know, this is the kind of resiliency we want in our office. So, like I said, it's paid a tremendous amount of benefits. And like I just wish more guys would understand being able to not only control your brand, but be yourself in doing so, because it'll pay off better.
Just touch on, before we move on to the brand building, what were some of the companies that have approached you out of that? And obviously, are you doing this all on your own? I know you have an agent who does your contracts, but
yeah.
On the marketing side, do you have a team of people, or is it kind of Andrew Hawkins Inc. who's kind of doing all this stuff?
Well, I do some of it myself. I do have, I signed with Octagon for marketing. Mm-hmm. Just headed up by Phil DiPicciotto.
Great guy.
Yeah, incredible guy. And, you know, they helped me with a lot of those things, man. Kind of getting your name out there. That helps. You know, on top of what you do for yourself, the more you can do, you really have to take control of it. I can't stress that enough, because even with those guys who do an incredible job, you know, if I feel like something is the right fit, I approach them and say, hey, let's explore this. And sometimes it materializes and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, it's good to be able to take control of you. Of what you have, because we only have a short amount of time, right, where people care what I say anyway, right? So we need to try to maximize it as best we can.
It was funny. Steve Mills, who's now the general manager of the Knicks, when I was working with the Knicks, would always come in and tell all the players, you know, you have to think about now as you're a member of this team, who you're playing in front of. And the Fortune 500 CEOs that sit around the court at Madison Square Garden, who will take a meeting with you because of where you are now. And a lot of times, athletes don't realize that. Isaiah Thomas, I remember a very vivid conversation that Isaiah had with Sean Landetta, who played in the NFL for about 150 years as a punter, and was thinking about hanging it up, and he had one more chance. And Isaiah told him, if you can do it, let them rip the jersey off you. If you can figure out what's important for you from a business perspective to get you to what is next. And it seems like while you're playing in the moment, you're still trying to get to what is next. And I guess that's how you kind of got into that position. But and I guess that's how you're trying to get to that position. So are there a couple of brands that you can just kind of throw out there that either Octagon has helped you with or you're now working with?
Yeah, I work with Tide.
The detergent company.
Yeah, I work with Tide. We just signed a new headphone deal that isn't all the way finished. So I don't want to announce that just yet. We're in talks right now with Adidas. We've been approached by Nike, Under Armour. What other ones we did?
That's a good start.
Yeah. But I mean, like I said, the opportunity, and for a guy that's not, you know, I'm not Calvin Johnson. I'm not demanding a bunch of marketing, you know, so.
But you've created your own brand.
We've been able to create a brand and create a message.
Yep, and that's kind of what I want to touch on now. So the creation of your own brand, and kind of the unfiltered access that the Players Tribune or LeBron James's new platform offers up, or there's a new platform now that Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf are backing.
Mm-hmm.
What is the value of that for you? And let's talk just about you as opposed, because it's not for everyone. You can't force something, and it can't always be constant, you know, saying, oh, I got something to say today. It may not be as interesting as something I want to say tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the value in controlling your own message and then using a platform like Players Tribune or Twitter or Facebook to go and tell it? How important was that to you? And then how do you tell other athletes what the value is and how they can kind of morph into that?
It was extremely important because, like I said, like my biggest thing was I wanted to show my insecurities. I wanted to show my vulnerability because people can relate to that.
And is that unusual? Do you think you talked about kind of the testosterone of the locker room?
I do. It is unusual because everyone is so busy trying to show that they are more important than they are, or that they are these bigger than life individuals, or that they're untouchable, you know, and that has never been me. And it's not honestly the case. You know, I'm 5'7". A lot of guys can relate to being 5'7". They understand that.
Everybody in this room almost.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they understand that obstacle. They've been told since they were a kid that they couldn't play in the NFL because of that. So showing that I also heard those same messages, and it's not because I'm the greatest athlete in the world. No, it took work. It took, you know, some luck, and it took being in the right situation in the right place at the right time. And that was extremely important to me because that's really who I am, and I feel like that's something that's going to last far beyond football. The story is football, yes, but it shows you can apply it to anything, any phase of life, and that's what I wanted my story to be, and that's what I wanted my message to be. So it was extremely important for me to be able to tell it the way I wanted to and with the amount of detail that it needed.
So clear and authentic are the two biggest things.
Yes.
And you had mentioned that Players Tribune got a tremendous response to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that there have been other athletes who tried and succeeded in various ways of doing it again. And that kind of morphs into the other idea of player image and being who you are and what the media is and controlling the message. There was an event this week at the Paley Center that Montclair State University put on, which you were on a panel with Val Ackerman and Harvey Arradin from the New York Times. And there was a big discussion about, you know, controlling the message and what athletes can do and can they get around the quote media.
Mm-hmm.
And Harvey Arradin touched on the difference between media and journalism. And media is really something that you've taken advantage of, which is controlling your own voice and putting it out there, versus where you would need help or someone telling a story that may not want to be told, which is journalism.
Yeah.
So you look at the Super Bowl and the two instances, you know, Peyton Manning giving two shout-outs to Budweiser,
uh-huh.
followed by Cam Newton and his choice of how he wanted to act or say what he wanted to say or not say what he wanted to say in the post-event press conference. What were your thoughts on both of those? Did you have an opinion on either of those?
I think I do have an opinion on both of them. We'll start with Cam Newton. We'll start with Cam Newton. I've been in that situation where you're frustrated, you don't want to answer questions. If it was me, I probably would have sat up there and answered questions. You know, I probably would have been visibly frustrated that I just lost the biggest game of my life, something I've been dreaming about since I was 4 years old. And at the same time, along those lines, I could see why he was frustrated. Moving forward, that he got a lot of backlash for it. You know, there were supporters, there were, you know, naysayers. And honestly, from my standpoint, I feel like that, if anything else, continues to raise his profile. I feel like everyone loves a villain, everyone loves a hero. And, you know, I feel like the most polarizing players are the ones that someone has an opinion on, good or bad. And, I feel like, yes, Peyton Manning, he's the best quarterback of all time. Most people love him. You know, he is so good at his job that he's always going to be Peyton Manning. But there's guys like, you know, arguably Russell Wilson probably isn't going to do as well as Cam in the marketing department because he doesn't generate as much of a conversation because he is a good guy. Everyone can see he's a good guy. And they can see he probably doesn't have much going on. He's, you know, for lack of a better term, boring. So Cam creates this conversation. Oh, I hate him or I love him. And I think it's going to help his marketing profile, regardless of what you say, because it's the most talked about post-game Super Bowl press conference in the history of the Super Bowl now, mm-hmm. because he was frustrated and walked off. Well, that's going to help in the back end. From a Peyton Manning standpoint, to me, I felt like it was his way of saying I'm retiring, because that was a, you know, deliberate plug for Budweiser. Somebody is going to benefit from
that. And he kissed the guy from Papa John's on the sideline too.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, he understands what he's doing. He's a very, very smart guy. Mm-hmm. So
it's interesting about Cam Newton and his brand,
mm-hmm.
Because he didn't do anything that would really kind of throw brands away from him. There was no violence, no drugs, there was no profanity.
Right.
It was him kind of showing, being authentic into what he is. And he has been available for the media. I mean, he's got a show that's going to be on Nickelodeon in September. So it's not like people have kind of backed off of him.
Right.
And I think that there's certainly a lot to be said to that. However, when you put on the hat of a parent, mm-hmm. as you are a parent,
right,
or you put on the hat of someone who's in the business world,
mm-hmm.
who has to face bad news, and yeah. has to go in and face the man and face the boss and talk to your family about something that is difficult to do, and you have to go in and do it. Is there a point where you have to say, and again, it's kind of playing to the same old boring stuff,
yeah,
but isn't there a point where you have to say, I got to go take my medicine, I got to go do this for 30 seconds, because that's my job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there definitely is, and I mean, that's the way things have been done. I'm not saying what he did was right. But I'm saying I don't think it's going to hurt him. It's definitely interesting. It gives you something to write about. It prolongs the story. Now, as a parent, that's not like there are things that I'm like, okay, I don't, you know, man, I had to teach my son about this now. We have to have this conversation. Yes, that is a situation where you can have a conversation with your kids. But at the same time, you just sat there and watched your kids, with your kids, 300-pound men, try to beat each other's brains out. So
good point.
Everybody has their own threshold, I guess.
Just to remind everyone, this is the Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm the solo host today, Joe Favorito, sitting in without my partner, Tom Richardson. And our guest is Andrew Hawkins of the Cleveland Browns, who you should talk a little bit about what you're doing in the Columbia program, the graduate sports yes. management program. Why are you here? What would you like to get out of it? And more importantly, what's the message that you want to make sure that people who aren't in the program understand about Andrew Hawkins and where this will take you going forward?
You know, my number one focus is being prepared for life after football. And I think this is an incredible start. You know, I think playing in the NFL gives me the opportunity to continue to work in football. And even I talked to mentors and they kind of, you know, reinforce that same message. But what I think the Columbia program does for me is it gives me the versatility to work beyond football. It gives me the versatility to work in sports and not only be able to provide a perspective from actual athletes, because I've lived that life, but also learn what, you know, executives learn what, you know, from finance to, you know, media marketing to, you know, analytics, you name it. This is a program where it's able to give you kind of a holistic view of what working in sports entails and, that's going to aid me tremendously as I go on from here.
Do you know what you want to do after you're done with pro football?
I have an idea. I have a strong idea. I mean, I want to be a general manager, but I think everyone, you know, everyone says that, mm-hmm. right?
In the NFL, not, I mean, would you be open to the answer? Would you be open to other sports?
Like I would be.
In Cleveland,
yeah.
Now you have someone who came from outside of football, now kind of running this stuff, in Paul DePodesta. Is that yeah. something that you will have a conversation with him to talk about how he got from one to the other?
No question. I mean, if you watch what he's done, and like I said, he has the opportunity to transcend football. If nothing
and
else.
Jonah Hill played him in Moneyball.
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, I'm open to working any facet of sports, man. And I think the Columbia program, like I said, it puts me in a great situation to not only, you know, meet people, but learn the basics and the things that I'm going to need to go work in, you know, whether it's rugby or baseball or basketball, what have you. And I think that's the part that excites me.
And all the other things we touched a little bit on, kind of reality shows, some mm-hmm. of the other things that you did to get there. I read somewhere that you also had a walk-on in Ides of March.
Yes.
How did that come about? Did you meet George Clooney? One of the great films of all time, by the way.
I did meet George Clooney, and I met Ryan Gosling. I filmed a huge scene with Ryan Gosling where I'm like, face, right in camera. He's yelling at someone over my shoulder. I got attacked. I kick people out the room. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to be in the movie. Whole scene got cut. I do a fly-by walk that you have to slow it down frame by frame to even see me.
What part of the movie was that? Was that after the intern died? Do you remember where it was?
No, the scene that they cut out.
Yeah,
it was in the beginning because we were in the campaign offices.
Okay.
So it would have been one of the opening scenes.
And you were in Cincy because the whole thing was filmed in Cincinnati.
It was in Cincinnati. My brother, like I said, he played 7 years for Cincinnati.
Right.
Even before I got there, he went to the University of Cincinnati. So I think I was there in the off season when I was in Canada, and someone just walked by us and was like, "Hey, you guys. You want to be in a movie?" We're like, "Yeah, sure. Who's in it?" George Clooney. Yeah. So we went there. We filmed for like a week at different scenes. He made it onto a couple more scenes than I did. But it was a cool experience, man.
But getting back to one other thing I want to touch on about branding and the media today and kind of the unfiltered access. As I said before, your brother was a talk show host
mm-hmm.
in Cincinnati. It was the other side. You know, there was a referral last night or in this event that we were at, where Harvey Arradin talked about how the Knicks used to refer to, or someone used to refer to the media, Michael Jordan, as you
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
You know, you guys, and the pack mentality. We've talked a lot about media training in other places and how you were kind of averse to it and what that actually is. But what is your view of kind of what journalism and the media is right now? Is it something that you think is necessary? Is it more unnecessary, or is there kind of a middle that fits in the narrative?
You know, I think it's probably a mix of both. I think it's necessary because I think fans want perspective from everybody, and the fans are the ultimate consumer. You know, I like, you know, things like the Players Tribune, and not just that. I mean, you know, Twitter, social media, media itself, like you said, I'm able to give my opinion on something directly to the fan. They might not agree with my perspective, so you know, people like Harvey can break it down to him a different way. People like, you know, Joe Favorito can break it down a different way and give different perspective based on the experience they've seen from years and years of the sport. You know what I mean? Athletes, we're a cog in the machine. And I think that's one of the reasons why I am so, I don't want to use the term outspoken, but I am very hard set on my opinions and trying to stay away from just the cliche opinions that every athlete, because no one ever talks about those guys. Years and years and years of it happen and go by, and it's the same thing year after year, and these guys just go through and you just get filtered through with it. But I feel like if you have something to say that's something you believe in and worth saying, then you say it, because that's what's going to make you stick out. That's what's going to make people remember you.
But the most important thing, I believe, is you have to think before you speak.
No question.
Make sure that's something that sometimes people fly off the handle. You know, there have been famous stories about Twitter and, you know, Facebook and other places where people just post things in an emotional moment. The most mm-hmm. important thing, I think, and something we talk about in class all the time, is think before you speak.
Yeah.
Where do you, as a person, as a consumer of media, as a fan, as a student, get your information from? Where are the places that you go to? Are there apps that you like? Are there news sources that you like to go to? Are there people that you follow in or out of sport to kind of make Andrew Hawkins a little bit better at what he does?
Yeah, I mean, I just try to get the information as it comes. I read Sports Business Daily. I read Pro Football Talk for my football fix. I'm an ESPN guy, obviously, the Players Tribune. Newsletters like the one, you know, from you, from our LinkedIn group. And I think that it gives you, everyone has their own mix. Everyone has their own little buffet of things that they use and gather their information to be privy to what's going on. And that's kind of my mix. And I think that every fan has their own separate buffet. And I think that's what makes sports cool, is because we're not all looking for the same thing. We don't all want to hear from the same kind of people. And, you know, I think that's going to continue to make media and journalism flourish as time goes on.
The last thing we want to touch on is technology. I was at the Super Bowl, some of the pre-event press, and Microsoft did a whole presentation on the tablets on the field. Has it helped improve your game? And do you see the NFL as kind of a leader in kind of the on-field use of technology to immediately impact the game?
Yes, I do. I don't think all technology helps. Sometimes I think it gets a little cluttered. Mm-hmm. But the use of tablets, we used the iPad when we first started in Cincinnati.
But now you can't say iPad. It's everything now is you can't, Microsoft.
Everything tablets. Is Microsoft. I can say iPad right. Because they're not cutting me the check. Yeah. But so that was an issue for Microsoft, because they were still calling the Microsoft services iPad. Right. You know, but they work. It helps me watch more film. If I want to break it down to, let me just see every third and two situation in the third quarter that the Seahawks are doing, I can get at it at a click of a button, as opposed to me going upstairs telling the video guy, hey, can you cut me a DVD of this? And it takes him, you know, downloading it, picking the plays out, you know. So I think technology helps tremendously in that aspect. As far as the on-the-field stuff, I definitely see the NFL as kind of the market leader as far as sports are concerned. And I never understood the steel shot thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I've played in the NFL the last 6 years, and it just always seemed so old-fashioned to me. I'm like, just give us the video. Right. You know, like, if you want to make the game better, just give us the video. I get that you don't want the advantage, but it's 2016 now. Paper steel shots aren't helping me.
Baseball still has phones in the dugout that you have to call. You can't pick up a cell phone and say, hey, get the left-hander or the right-hander up. It's interesting how advanced sports is, but yet when it comes to those traditions, the pushback seems like it's still there, although it seems like now the organization you're with is going to be much more progressive going forward and figuring out how that makes a winning culture.
Exactly. So,
the last thing is culture. The best businesses in the world have a common culture, work together. You've been in a place that I would call disruptive at some points. You've seen it from the other side. You won championships with the Alouettes. You were successful in college. The Bengals went on under Marvin Lewis to be very successful. I'm sure you touched on that. How important is the culture of a business or a locker room to success, and what makes a good culture?
I think it's extremely important. I think guys need to realize that everyone's working towards a common goal, and that sounds cliche. It sounds like I'm stating the obvious, but that isn't always the case. You know, I've gone on record in saying that the Browns have done a tremendous job this offseason to putting things in place to show that cohesion is very important, and I think it is. I mean, players need to see from the top that everyone's on the right page. And whereas before, I don't think that was always the case. You know, but like I said, I mean, I think it's extremely important because, you know, players all have a certain thing to worry about, right? Everyone's trying to maximize their profit. They're trying to maximize their value.
In a very limited window, too.
In a very limited window, and they're trying to prove their value. You know, so the bigger picture has to always be that high in the sky looking down, that we understand, okay, I'm trying to get the biggest contract I can as a wide receiver, but that has to fit in the framework of this organizational goal, you know, and everyone needs to have that. And if you don't have that, I think that's where you run into trouble.
Andrew Hawkins, how do we find you on social media for people who want to follow?
Follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Hawk, H-A-W-K. That is simple. I've got to be the most simple social media name of all the guests you've had this year.
And I'm sure you'll find people, fans of the Atlanta Hawks or other people find you as well.
A lot of Seahawks fans follow me as well.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. Again, our guest is Andrew Hawkins. Most importantly, kind of an entrepreneur, student in our Columbia program, and also, by the way, happens to be a member of the Cleveland Browns of the NFL. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show. That's the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. My co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student James Appel. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and on other key platforms. You can also see it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CUSportsBiz, that's B-I-Z. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you.